Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your host, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rowles. And so this is kind of a highly anticipated episode for me personally, just because Jake Burns, who is coming on to talk with me about the Browns-Broncos game, is a film analyst that I've been following for years now. He's somebody who, even when the Broncos weren't playing the Browns, he's somebody that I've learned a lot about film from. I follow his work just because, first of all, I like Baker Mayfield, but also because like I read his stuff and I actually feel like I'm really learning. So hopefully you guys do as well. If you guys do not already follow him on Twitter, you should. He writes for the Orange and Brown Report. And his Twitter is Jake_Burns18. And then the OBR is @TheOBR. Thanks for joining me, man. I'm really, really stoked to talk with you.
Joe, way too kind, man. Seriously. Not even necessary to say all that stuff, but it's so kind. I appreciate it, man. And you know, I have nothing but respect for you. Great discourse on Twitter. And anytime we come across each other, and you did a great job on my pod yesterday to help our fan base get to know the Broncos. So I am privileged to be here on yours, man. Hopefully I can do the same for you and your Denver followers.
So kind of right off the bat, I think we have to talk about the injury situation, just because I think, honestly, with a short week, Thursday night game, health, all that, like, it's availability is honestly may very well determine this game. By the time you guys are listening to this, you probably already know Baker Mayfield will not play. Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, both out. As of right now, it looks like the tackles, both Jack Conklin and Jedrick Wills, are also questionable. Where do you kind of land on this? And like, how do you feel about like the potential replacements? I know Broncos fans are pretty familiar with Case Keenum from like our time with him. But how do you kind of feel about Keenum in the Stefanski offense?
Well, the thing that there's a big misconception, Joe, that Keenum has a bunch of experience in Kevin's offense. Well, that's not actually the truth. They work together under, I think they worked together under Shermer, if I recall, in 2017. I could be wrong about that, but it was not Kevin's offense. Kevin was the OC. If you look at the 2017 Minnesota Vikings season, Kevin was the quarterback's coach, which, you know, they work hand in hand in that role. But this was Pat Shermer's offense. So it wasn't like when he arrived in Cleveland that he was like coming back into this offense that he was accustomed to. Now, he worked in Denver with Scangrello, so he knew the structure, right? The quarterback collective stuff, like, had an idea of the structure, I think, you know, for the most part, if I'm tracking this right, which I could be tracking it wrong, but I think I'm on the right path. But again, correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But
so they worked under the when he was with Denver, Keenum was with Bill Musgrave. And so when the Broncos hired Rich Scangarello, they decided, and again, like, I, at the time, I was very critical of this.
I was off it, a year.
No, you're right? Good. Yeah. Yep. But
or was I? It was 2019. No, this Scangarello got there.
Yep.
That's
but
right.
But it's also, I don't fault you for this, because it's one of those things where Denver had different OCs every year up until this year. Like, it's, they did. It's such a, yeah, it's a whole thing. But when Scangarello came on, the Broncos actually shipped Keenum off to Washington, did something similar to what Carolina did with Teddy Bridgewater, where they ate a bunch of dead money for him to play somewhere else. I think they ate $6.5 million for Keenum to be with Washington at the time. And then they traded a fourth round pick for Joe Flacco, who by just about every measure imaginable that season, 2019, was worse. I personally thought Keenum, and again, I don't think he's a world beater by any means, but at least until Bridgewater, Keenum was probably the Broncos' best quarterback since Peyton Manning.
Yeah, Keenum's fine. He's certainly, yeah, better suited to be a backup. You know, yeah. I think I trace Keenum back to his first 3 years in Houston when he got some exposure in 13 and 14. I believe that was with Kubiak. So it was between Wade Phillips and Kubiak. Kubiak got fired, so he didn't get a ton of time, but he got some exposure to it. So nonetheless, he's been here a year. Back to your original question, he's been in the offense for a year. He didn't play last year. Obviously, Baker's never really missed a start. I mean, it's pretty remarkable considering where the Browns were for all that time, but he's at least been exposed to it. He'll be fine. He's always been okay in the preseason, and I'm sure just like Denver fans felt about him, like, yeah, he's okay. He's a professional quarterback. He's fine at the lower end of the spectrum there, but he's not going to go out and win you football games. If you play well around him, you can win plenty of football games. But that's the problem going into tomorrow night, is they don't have the dudes around him that they would traditionally have. They might be missing both tackles. They're clearly already missing Chubb and Hunt, who are already ruled out. Odell Beckham's dealing with a pretty gnarly AC joint sprain, so it's up in the air whether he's going to play. I think he will play, but we'll see if he does actually end up going through and playing. But you know, you put all that stuff together, you know, missing Jarvis Landry, all of it is like a lot. And I don't think he's the type of quarterback who can overcome all of that. So, you know, the hope for Cleveland fans is, because Baker hasn't been put on IR, I don't know what's going on. It feels to me like he should get surgery and wipe out this season for him personally. But they are letting it linger. Maybe Case, they think, can be a stopgap while they get Baker's shoulder stability and inflammation to go down. I'm not, again, the plan there is very murky. We'll see what happens, but for a one night thing, you know, you never know. You really never know. And there's motivation there. He played in Denver. He got traded off by Denver. I mean, there's some, you know, there's some weird, right, you know, comeback type of game stuff happening there. So we'll see. I mean, he's a high end backup. That's what he is. Yeah. So if he has to play 8, 9, 10 games in a season, he's going to play like a low end starter. If he's a high end backup, you're a low end starter. So that's kind of what Case is. Doesn't have a great arm. He'll try to throw some anticipation to make up for the arm strength, but he'll also put the ball in harm's way every now and again because he's not afraid to do that stuff. But we'll see, you know, we'll see if they scheme up some easy things for him. The thing is, with the way Baker was playing hurt, I don't see there be, so for the sake of this game only, cause that's all you guys really care about is this game, obviously. I don't see there being a massive, massive drop off just because Baker was playing so poorly injured that Case being completely healthy has a chance to replicate that, if not be a little better, because he can be a little bit more comfortable with the eyes and trusting what he's seeing and throwing it. Baker was really starting to hesitate, doubt what he was seeing because he was afraid to rip it with the front shoulder being so beat up. So that's just a little piece of stuff to watch. And we'll see if Cleveland gets creative with ways to get him some schemed up throws in this one.
Well, and that's honestly probably my biggest concern, is because I over the last 2 days, I crammed as much Browns tape as I could. And that's one of those things I started to notice, too, is Baker's mechanics. There's times where he's not, you can tell, like you can tell he's in pain. And whereas with Keenum's going to be completely fresh. The Broncos don't have any recent tape on him. So it's almost similar in a way to the way the Broncos kind of went into the game last week, where Greg Olsen was taking over play calling. And the Broncos knew the personnel they were going to be dealing with, which is obviously a little bit different now. But Greg Olsen had all this tape on the Fangio defense, whereas the Broncos had the Gruden offense in terms of tendencies. So that could be a problem. Do you expect Stefanski's offense to, I mean, it'll still look like Stefanski's offense, right?
Well, yeah, I don't think anything will change. Partly because if they were changing things, and maybe there's some answers behind closed doors, but we don't know, Joe, what they really think about Baker's future here. If it were already ruling him out for the year, maybe you could see some of that. But again, it's a short week. How much practice time are you really getting out there to go through and tweak a bunch of stuff? They might have some different tendencies, but you know, for the most part, Baker's not a great athlete, but Keenum's a worse athlete. So you're not going to put in a whole bunch of moving things for him all the time. Like they could boot him. They'll boot him a little bit here and there, but they're not going to get really crazy and do any kind of like read stuff I don't think they'll mix in. They're a low RPO team, one of the lower in the entire NFL. I don't think they'll do any of that either. So they'll be who they are and they'll try to mix in tendency beaters, which is because I thought the Cardinals started to pick up on a lot of tendencies and what they were doing. So I would hope, given the fact that someone was doing that on just Sunday, you could find some wrinkles off of things that you have been doing that are very tendency based. So same offense, same structure. We'll see if they throw in anything that keeps Denver a little off guard.
If Conklin and Wills can't play, how bad do those matchups look to you against the Broncos front from what you've seen?
Well, I'm not sure. I can't speak to who plays opposite. I know Bradley Chubb does, but he's hurt. You can tell me who's playing opposite Von Miller. I mean, Von Miller's special. We know that. I mean, he's as good as it gets in the NFL. But they did have Blake Hance out there in L.A. against the Chargers playing Joey Bosa all game. And Joey Bosa's pretty damn good himself. Excuse my language.
No, you're good.
So they're not unexposed to or unaccustomed to that for Blake. Like, Blake gets help. They'll help a lot. They'll double him. They'll bunch set receivers in and have them chip, get a piece before they go out on a shallow, or you know, they'll inline tight ends or put a tight end as a sniffer and double team. They'll do a bunch of different things, I would imagine, for Vaughn. I can't speak to what the rest of the pass rush will do. I mean, the weakness will be wherever Vaughn isn't, because they'll send help that way, but they're really dealing with two weaknesses, and James Hudson, who's a fourth round rookie playing on the right side. And then you got Blake Hance, who Blake Hance to me is a guard. He's a guard center guard player, but he's playing left tackle out of necessity because they're also down Chris Hubbard, their swing tackle. So they're like three tackles down. They're playing guy number four and guy number five. It's really just been a disaster of injuries this year for Cleveland. But they'll help. They were okay last week. I didn't think they were good. They gave up a couple clean runs to Baker where it was like, that's pretty ugly. But for the most part, they're okay. And the sacks that Baker took, four of the five of them ended up being on him, you know, getting out of the pocket, escaping things, but then holding on to the ball too long and not throwing downfield and taking a hit and not seeing the hit and getting sack fumbled. Right. So a little bit of it for these guys will be helping them, but they're not like disasters. In my opinion, they're okay. They're not. I mean, you know, it's just how they play. It's week to week. That's the thing, is the inconsistencies of guys like this. So they're not like terrible, but they can be average to below average. And that's kind of what they will hope for right now. I mean, any team who gets to their fourth and fifth tackle, Joe, it's like, cross your fingers, man, and really hope the ball gets out early.
I mean, and the Broncos are not with tackles, but the Broncos are dealing with this on the other side of the ball with their linebacker situation, just because Alexander Johnson and Josie Jewell are now on IR, which means that the Broncos are starting Justin Cernod for his fifth game, and then Micah Kizer, who wasn't even on the team a month and a half ago. So I definitely understand. I just the Broncos pass rush has actually kind of been disappointing this year, which is interesting, just because they have a lot of resources dedicated to it. And granted, like, part of it is Bradley Chubb's injury, which is a big deal because Malik Reed doesn't necessarily create one-on-one wins consistently. But the interior defensive line is not what it was supposed, like what it was expected to be, I guess is how I would say it. Draymond Jones is still quite good, but they just haven't generated a lot of pressure to the point where Fangio is starting to send a lot of blitzes, but then that's leaving your secondary kind of susceptible to big plays. And I mean, Broncos fans may not remember Case Keenum super fondly because of like the Demaryius Thomas miss against Kansas City, but he doesn't hesitate to put the ball up if there's opportunities to do so. So I could see him taking some shots.
Yeah, he will. I mean, if you bring pressure and he can identify the route behind it, he'll rip it. Like, he has mm-hmm. he has no fear of that stuff, and he's playing with no, there's nothing to lose, right? I think that's the thing that Baker's been playing recently with, is there's a lot to lose. You know, he could potentially hurt the shoulder more. He's thinking about money that's on the line for him. There's a whole bunch of different moving targets for Baker where he's at mentally. But Case, it's like, hey man, this could be my last real shot in the NFL to show what I'm worth and what I can do, and that I'm good enough to continue being a backup, but I could be, you know, the next Ryan Fitzpatrick and be a stopgap quarterback as a starter still in this league for some franchise. So he will throw the football, I have no doubt. If I were Denver, I wouldn't blitz a ton. I really wouldn't. I would trust that you can get pressure with your guys up front and that you can take advantage of some weak issues on the outside of the Browns offensive line and make Case throw into traffic. That's what I would try to do, is consistently make him beat you throwing into traffic. Because Baker's started every game and for 3.5 years now. There's no real – I mean, Case is not getting reps with these guys. Like, mm-hmm. there has been – none of that. So I would imagine there will be some timing and cohesion issues between the offense, as you would expect in this scenario.
And the other part about this is, too, with both Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb out, the running back situation is D'Ernest Johnson. And for Broncos fans, he hasn't touched the ball much, which makes him – I mean, I will say, like, from my perspective, the fact that Chubb and Hunt are not playing is a huge, huge benefit to Denver, because they've had issues stopping the run for a couple weeks now. And especially in the red zone, the way Stefanski will use motion to create favorable angles or overwhelm the point of attack, or just create eye candy. I thought that, like, before we knew for a fact that Chubb and Hunt were both out, I was really, really nervous about that, just because Sternad and Kaiser... that looks like, you know, shooting gallery a little bit. So that could be a big thing for Denver.
Yeah, I mean, D'Ernest is a fine enough player. He was an undrafted guy in 2018 who made the roster. He's done some kick return stuff. He's got like 100 and, if I looked at it earlier, like $198 in his career on the ground. He had a nice little game against Dallas last year when Dallas defense was in shambles at that point, and the Browns ran for like 280 yards that day. But that was the game Nick missed 4 weeks. That was the game he got hurt in 2020. So he took over. I think he ran for like 70 yards. And then he had a nice game against the Colts and closed them out. They ran a little gun outside zone concept, and he ended up busting it for 30 yards. I mean, that's really been the extent of it. He's a nice player. He's a backup, borderline backup in the NFL, right? You know, he was sitting behind Marlon Mack at South Florida for all that time, got his chance. I think he ended up being a second team All-American guy. Sorry, All-Athletic Conference guy. And he was, you know, he was okay. He does kickoffs. He's...
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He's not a he's not a special gifted zone runner like, you know, that Nick is. He's not as brutal downhill, jump over you, run through you as Kareem is. And he's not as gifted in the pass game as Kareem is. So it's a big downgrade. I mean, you know, but at the same time, he's capable. You know, he's capable enough that if you give him opportunities, you know, I always talk about this, he'll be the Thursday night player of the game. You know, if you can't gap or maintain, the Browns still block the hell out of it. Like, they're really good at blocking zone and gap. They run more gap than zone, which surprises people. And if you don't, you know, if you don't hit your run fits the way you need to, D'Ernest is capable. So we'll see. He's going to have his first real opportunity in the NFL to get a lion's share of the carries, which is good for him. Happy for him. He's a good person. Great guy. And they'll also get youngster Dimitri Felton involved too, I would imagine. They brought up John Kelly from the practice squad too, who had a nice preseason. He's a very, very physical running back too. But Felton's interesting. He's a wide receiver hybrid running back at UCLA. He's spent most of his time in Cleveland playing more wide receiver because of Odell was coming back from injury, and now Jarvis went out week two. So he's been doing some different things in the wide receiver department. He's very gifted player too. Have not seen enough of him in the run game. He was more of a preseason running back where he had some nice little, you know, the bang bend
Core stuff, bounce, bang, bend, and outside zone. He had a couple nice bends, cutting it back to the backside. He's fine, but he's definitely a more gifted wide receiver, but they could get really creative with him and wide receiver from the backfield. Browns love to motion running backs in and out of the backfield. Multiple reasons, deducing coverage pre-snap is the obvious reason there, but they also like to get advantageous matchups in different locations. So expect to see Felton if they're going to be in third down situations. That's the plan that I would expect, as long as they trust that between Johnson and Felton, one of them can pass pro inside, because you need one of them to pass pro. We'll see what they ultimately trust there. But the generic plan is, again, we're learning on the fly. I have not seen the Browns in these sort of depth scenarios in my time covering them, and it's been a while. They'll probably do early downs D'Ernest and late downs Demetric, just to get Demetric some chances to catch a football. But D'Ernest is a capable catcher of the football too. Like, he's not terrible at it. So, but again, this is a lot of my stuff here is based on what I've seen in camp, going up and watching them or watching them in preseason. Like, I have not seen these dudes play real high volume touch NFL carries. So it'll be a learning experience for me too.
Well, and one of the things about it that makes me kind of nervous for this matchup is just that, again, the Broncos defense has had a lot of struggles. And not only that, but beyond the Chubb injury, Patrick Surtain has now taken over the starting duties at left corner. There is a chance that Caden Stearns makes his first start on Thursday if Justin Simmons' wife goes into labor. And again, I hope if that happens, I wish him all the best. Like, I don't fault him by any means. But if that happens, Caden Stearns is making his first start on a short week against a team with a very good play caller. The Broncos linebacker core has two new guys. And so, like, the chances for coverage bust seems very high, even with, you know, the injury situation on the other side of the field. So that is a concern for me. And I'm glad you mentioned Felton, because he's somebody who showed up in small doses when I was watching the tape. And I could see Stefanski dialing up some isolated matchups against Cernod. Cernod is a good run player. He does okay in coverage in terms of, like, he's good in space. But I could definitely see him be isolated and fail in that regard. He had some struggles. I want to say it was Cleveland. I want to say Baltimore did that to him once. And then the Steelers did that with Najee Harris. Granted, it's Najee Harris, but I am concerned about that. On the other side of the ball, though, because I want to be conscious of your time, but I want to touch on this because this is actually the side of the ball. Cleveland's still very strong here. I know that Jadeveon Clowney is questionable as of right now, and I know JOK is on injured reserve, so he won't play. And I'm sad because I really, really enjoyed watching him. Honestly, he might be one of my favorite players in the NFL at this point. But personally, I'm a little relieved just because he's a destroyer, sideline to sideline, the way he can clean up. I mean, that'll almost definitely hurt the second level defense.
Yeah. I had to put out a tweet about it recently because he's playing really, really well. And, I think he was becoming quickly one of the more special linebackers in the NFL. Like, the dude is as twitchy, click and close gifted as I've seen in Cleveland. Now, that bar is not high for Cleveland linebackers, but he's in the group, right? He's in the group that is changing games at the second level. It's a rare thing for linebackers to do, and I thought he was really changing games. So we'll see. I think that maybe Malcolm Smith, who is a veteran for them, who's been around for a while, a couple years now, played pretty well this year before the abdominal issue. He could be back. But they also have Ronnie Harrison and they have John Johnson, guys who have done that before. They've come down in the box and been that type of player. They could get flexible there. But losing JOK hurts. It's definitely going to end because he was upticking. He started the year in like the mid 20s to low 30 snap count ranges. And the last 2 weeks, he was over 50. Last Chargers game is over 50 when they were clearly identifying him as a guy they could not take off the field. And he was up into 64 range at 64, 65 last week before he got hurt or something like that. I could have those two flipped around because he left early in this one. But nonetheless, it sucks. It's a high ankle sprain. He's going to be out for a while. It's going to change their defense a little bit because I thought they were settling into a groove with that. But maybe it can also provide some clarity to what they're doing at safety, because I know you talked to me about the skill in the secondary is really strong in Denver, but they're not performing. It's the same way we feel in Cleveland. They have a nice group of safeties talent-wise between Ronnie, John Johnson, and Grant Delpit, but they're not performing the way we think they're capable of. So I don't know, maybe moving one of them closer, getting all three of them on the field, trying to adjust some roles can help, because the last 2 weeks they've been busting coverages like crazy, playing a lot of quarters, leading the league in quarters, but they continue to bust coverage in quarters. Teams are manipulating them, doing bunches, doing turn releases, doing a whole bunch of different things that are putting a lot of stress on the coaching points and how they want their guys to play. So they're being what's called schemed up. And We'll see if the Browns can come up with some answers for that, but that's been the issue. You know, the first 4 weeks of the season, it felt like they were really covering things well. And I think some OCs have picked up on tendencies for how the Browns guys are coached and have put stress on those things lately. So we'll see if Denver can do some similar things, because you'll notice it right away. It'll be really easy to identify when they get schemed up, because there's going to be nobody home. And there's just, it's just something that we've noticed lately, is that teams have a great feel for what they're trying to do. The Browns do. What do they, how do they pass off routes, or how does the safety's eyes identify number one, two, or three in a 3-by-1 look, different things like that. So they're susceptible there. And there's been all this conversation about communication and these breakdowns, and players are saying it's the players, coaches are saying it's the coaches. They're all taking credit, but somebody's got to step up and figure it out. It's getting to a crucial point here. So yeah, the JOK thing stinks. Clowney played really, really well last week, played the whole game. He has only missed the Chargers game this year, which he went into that Chargers game with an elbow issue that was questionable, and then all of a sudden didn't play because of a knee, which was really weird to everybody, that the knee, I don't know if he did it in warm-up training camp, or that's the wrong way to put it, in warm-up or like run-throughs, something, I don't know, when he was in LA, because he traveled. He was on the sideline. He just didn't play because of a weird designation that wasn't anything that we gathered. So we were a little nervous about that. So it was good to see him play last week. He's trending toward playing. The rule has been, Joe, that if you don't practice, they don't seem to play him. So like if you DNP'd all week, you don't play. Now, this week's different because you're short a day. You know, normally you get an extra day late in the week, a Friday, whatever, to get right and see if you practiced them. But like the only guy that I thought would play that was DMP'd all week was Odell. So it looked like Clowney was limited too. I think most of the guys who are limited, I think I have a pretty good feel will play. I don't know if they'll rush the tackles. Jedrick Wills has that sprained ankle in week one, has been fighting it, finally sat out last week. I think they might send him out one more time before they start their AFC North play next week.
Makes sense.
We'll see what's up. We haven't heard much about Jack Conklin. I mean, I don't hear anything. I mean, his agent's Drew Rosenhaus, so we don't get any insight into that whole thing. We'll see. But Clowney, I feel okay about playing, and I feel okay about most of the secondary playing in this one too. The only loss is JOK, but it's a very important loss, because as you were studying it, and I know other Denver people have been studying the Browns too, he pops. Like, he jumps off the tape. He is a really good football player. So just like, you know, Denver will be having some linebacker issues, Cleveland will too, and we'll see how they overcome them.
Kind of the last thing before I let you go, because again, I know I'm keeping you. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater, not quite the same situation as Baker, but he left the game last week basically with a limp, hurt his foot on a touchdown pass. We found out today, and again, as you guys are listening to this, it's going to be Thursday, but we found out that he actually also has a quad issue. Basically, he's been limping, I mean, at the press conferences, at practice, all week. He is expected to play, but there is a chance that Drew Lock actually ends up starting against the Browns. I guess you've watched both a little bit, I would assume, Jake. First, do you think the game plan really changes for either?
I don't know. I would presume they've upticked their blitzing a little bit. Maybe if they get Lock, they feel more compelled to bring pressure, because that's something they like to do against guys who don't play a lot. They could like to try to throw that wrench at him. With Teddy, I would be a little less inclined to bring extra bodies at him, but I don't know. I think the Browns, this is my opinion, Joe, I think they're really focusing on themselves.
Yeah.
Because the issue is the Browns have been beating themselves, because they're not communicating very simple things, it seems. So I don't know that they would look at their game plan. Say if Kyler was out last week with the COVID situation going on in Arizona, you would completely change your approach if Kyler was out.
Yeah.
I don't think if you get Drew and Teddy flipped around, I don't think it changes much. I mean, there's going to be some tendencies. I think Drew's got a more gifted arm, obviously, than Teddy, but I think Teddy processes the game a little bit better. So there's some different little wrinkles that you could mix in. But for the most part, I think it would stay the same. Whereas if you were going from a super mobile quarterback to Colt McCoy, who's the backup for the Cardinals last week, you would alter your approach. So it's a good question. There might be some intricate details that they would attack and maybe look at their tendencies for certain, you know, maybe 3rd and 14, like 3rd and 8 or more. We're going to do this to Teddy, but with Drew, we want to do a little bit more, maybe cover 3 and rob the middle. I don't know. I'm just giving you an example. That's the sort of little granular tweaks that you could see a DC make, but nothing overhaulish. Let's say, hey, we're going to play more dime now because this quarterback does this, this, then this. I don't think that would happen all too much. And plus, it's a short week, man. A short week, and you have such little prep as it is. I know most times teams who play Sunday, Thursday will start game planning ahead, looking ahead at the next team to try to get a little bit out in front of it. They'll designate some coaches, some assistant coaches to assistant like position coaches and offensive quality or defensive quality control to really be looking ahead earlier than normal. But to me, it doesn't, you just can't, there's such little prep time and you're worrying about your own guys in Cleveland so much because of all the things happening with the injuries on offense and all the things happening defense with communication issues where they just like, hey, can we get lined up and run things right all the time? Like that should be the goal, you know? So I hope that, I hope above anything else, the defense Joe Woods has structured that is geared toward not giving up big plays, funneling, keeping explosives at a minimum, step up, tackle, you know, funnel throws to certain portions of the field, box them in, tackle them, bring up, you know, make teams go on 12, 15 play drives. That's the theory. It's a very popular NFL theory these days. Cleveland's trying to do it, and they've done it well for the most part, but the last 2 weeks, give up a 72-yard touchdown to Mike Williams. Give up a 40-yard touchdown to Mike Williams against the Chargers. Herbert's four touchdowns were with nobody within 5 yards of the receiver at time of catch. They're busting coverages. Last week against Arizona, they busted the first coverage. Give up a third. It's third and 16 from the 17-yard line going in the red zone. Third and 16. Give up a touchdown in the left corner of the end zone and cover six. They give up a touchdown late in the game on a quarters coverage where Ronnie jumps. Like, they're just not doing the things they're supposed to do. So I would imagine a lot of the onus this week from the Browns is fix us before we worry about anybody else. So I would imagine that's the approach.
It makes sense. And it's kind of a perfect storm kind of running into Denver, where I think it's kind of a make or break game for the Broncos just because they're on a 3-game losing streak. They're about to hit kind of like the real meat of their schedule. Before mm-hmm. Cleveland's injuries, like, this game looked very, very daunting. Even now, it still looks, they could definitely drop this game. And the scary thing for Denver is, for you guys, dear listeners, the Broncos drop this game. They kind of head into a mini bye with one game before the trade deadline. They're 3-4, potentially kind of floating around near the bottom of the playoff chase with the AFC West ahead of them. So if the Broncos drop this game, I would not be surprised if George Payton starts to make calls and starts to sell off parts just because he's not worried about his job security. And it might make sense to collect some draft capital and start to try and chase whatever's down the road. It's going to be close, though. I think it'll be an interesting game. It might turn into a slog just because I think both defenses theoretically should have the upper hand. I hope it's good, though. I hope the game kind of, like, we don't have more injuries on either side just because I do really like the Browns. I'm really rooting for you guys, except, you know, today. thank you so much for joining me. Guys, again, if you do not follow Jake on Twitter, you go do it. He is at Jake_Burns18. You can find his work over at The OBR. Thanks so much for joining me.
Joe, my pleasure, man. I think you're spot on. I think it's going to be an ugly game that not many people outside of Denver and Cleveland will watch or care much about. But you're right. Both teams backs against the wall. It's must win for Cleveland if they have any hope of going the places they wanted to go. And I know Denver is doing the same, right? If they're going to dictate where their season goes, neither of these teams can afford to fall to 3-4. Going into what is a mini bye week for both teams. So yeah, should be a fun, I can't say that. It could be a fun game, but it will be a stressful game for both sides because there's going to be a bunch of, you know, less talented players than you're accustomed to seeing. And it's going to lead to some frustrating situations, but at the very minimum, both teams will be really hungry to win because they know they need it. So the hope is that provides some sort of quality to the game that maybe extends the lack of skill that is being forced onto the field with these injuries. So Joe, thanks for having me, man. Big pleasure of mine and, you know, fan of yours and all of that too. So keep crushing it this year, man. And again, thanks for having me on.
Definitely.